So Sound of Hockey episode 274, we're calling this one. My voice kind of cracked like Alicia Keys there. Did you hear that?
No.
We're calling this one the Dave Andrechuk episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Well, this is a listener submission.
Okay.
Dave Andrechuk.
Wait, Dave Andrechuk reached out to you to say like, hey.
Not quite.
Oh.
Not quite. Comes from Andrew.
Okay.
He suggested Dave Andrechuk for 274 because he had 274 career power play goals.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Which was all-time record until Ovi passed him. Mm-hmm. So a couple years back. So I think that's kind of cool.
You both looked at me like I had two heads there when I said the Alicia Keys thing. Did you get what I was referencing or not?
Something tells me she screwed up the Super Bowl.
Okay. So there's, yes.
Based on just this conversation, yeah. Nothing else.
I'm pro Alicia Keys, first of all. I want to put that out there. I think she's wonderful. But this has been a little bit of an interesting thing going around the internet this week, is that Alicia Keys came in for a very brief cameo in Usher's halftime performance. And right when she started singing, her voice cracked really badly. And everyone certainly heard this. But if you go and look at any of the videos on like YouTube or whatever, her voice doesn't crack. So they like cleaned it up, took down the original video of her that everyone heard live, and replaced it with like fixed audio of her voice not cracking. And anywhere that the video
has... So there's
has,
a cover up.
Yes. There's a big conspiracy happening here. And apparently like anywhere that the video was posted on YouTube or whatever, where somebody like bootlegged it, it's been taken down.
Oof.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I haven't.
So you're deep in the conspiracies this week.
I know, man. What,
yeah. What happened with JFK?
I have some theories on that too. Okay. Actually,
we'll talk about that later.
Like stuff are you kind of accessing?
Right. So I'm thinking like you know the GIF of Charlie Day where he's got all the pins, and that's also how I envision us dealing with the pins that we put into.
We
things.
Have to make that happen. 100%. I'm going to make a note.
Pin board.
We're going to make that happen.
Yeah. Okay, so let's put a pin in you getting a pin board for all the things that we're putting pins into. Hey, this is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown at Darren Fun Brown. On the Twitter/the X, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL to Seattle on the X.
And also Curtis Izaki. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, everyone. Deep Sea Hockey on the X.
And don't forget to follow us at @sound_hockey on the X. And don't forget to follow us on TikTok, where our guy Cameron is doing some awesome stuff.
Instagram,
and join the Patreon. Good old patreon.com/soundofhockey.
We do have a mailbag
coming tonight. Well, we're recording right after this episode, the separate mailbag.
And it's a doozy. I thought we were going to talk a lot about trades and stuff. No.
Mm-hmm.
No, the patrons came hard with the questions. It's going to be a doozy.
All right. I'm excited for that. I haven't seen the questions yet, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, do join. We add some extra content for you, and we just really appreciate the support. To those who are members of the Patreon, thank you so much for that ongoing support. We love you all very much. We did a get off my lawn last week about crows destroying my lawn.
The Discord knows. Yeah.
So it's been an interesting week. They're a polarizing subject. And by polarizing, I mean most people out there seem to be on the opposite side of the... On the opposite pole, I think is what you would say, right?
I think most
I was
going to
say on the opposite
generous.
Side of the pole, but I think it's the poles at the opposite ends of
very weird, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Have you found anyone on your side?
No.
Okay.
No one has like come
so
to me
most.
And been like, yeah, I agree, crows are terrible. One thing that got sent to me that I thought was really interesting was a Reddit story. Curtis Crabtree sent this to me, who writes for Fox 13. He's also one of my partners in crime when I go on What's Crackin'. John, you do that sometimes too. So
yeah.
Good guy, Curtis. But he sent me a thing from Reddit where somebody had started feeding crows at some point, and the crows then became very protective of him. And so like if the neighbors all like came over, then they'd start attacking the neighbors. And so he had this army of crows that was following him around and protecting him. And eventually the resolution was to, they talked
move.
To the Audubon Society. Yeah, just move. they talked to the Audubon Society, and the Audubon Society recommended that the neighbors also start feeding the crows.
Oh.
And then the crows just became like part of the community. They were just all buddies at that point.
That sounds incredible.
And a lot of the neighbors were
That's
older.
That's a community I want to be part of.
The
too.
Crow, the yeah. crow community. And but a lot of the neighbors were older. One of the neighbors fell down in his driveway one day, and the crows started making such a ruckus because they were also worried about him that people came out to find out what was going on, helped the guy, So the Crows kind of like saved the neighbor after.
I mean, that's what we're talking about. Yeah. That's why we love the Crows.
Well, all of this conversation about the Crows has sort of lightened my mood on them a little bit. I'm looking at them a little different, but I do keep catching them eating my lawn every single day. And so I'm really conflicted. And actually, one update, this morning I got in the car, took it out of the garage, started driving, got to the corner. There's two crows eating the lawn. So I roll down the window and I clap my hands a couple times and they look at me like, what? What's your problem? And I go, get out of here. And they finally flew away.
Dude, you are, oh man.
So
I'm
then
scared.
I went around the corner and there's this guy walking his dog who I've never seen him before, but he's standing there just like looking at me like, what are you doing? And I literally kept the window rolled down. I was like, the crows are eating my yard. And he's like, all right. And then that was it. And then I drove away and it was so awkward. I was like, well, that guy thinks I'm completely, completely insane.
I can't believe you're pissing him off like this.
Who, the crows?
Yeah.
Well,
you're
just
doubling down.
I'm not trying to piss them off. You know, I just want them to stop eating my lawn.
Have you tried
that? I already
am.
They're eating every.
No.
You know, intentionally feeding them, like the story you just told.
This feels like a slippery slope to start feeding the crows.
Oh man, I don't know.
If you give a mouse a cookie,
on that slope. Well, yeah, that's true.
I know, but
I'm familiar with this book.
You're poking the bear or poking the crows a bit here.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm eager to hear the update for next week. So
I had a suggestion to sing Mr. Jones by the Counting Crows as the outro tonight. If I do end up doing that, I don't think I'm going to, but if I do end up doing that, I'm going to only sing it in the way that
the new style
that they performed it at Chateau Saint-Michel when I went last summer, which was completely unrecognizable and infuriating to listen to. So that's how I would sing it if I'm going to sing it.
So you just so you know that the Discord is very pro crow.
Uh-huh.
And we've actually decided to ban you
from
the Discord.
Well, that's fine.
I think there's a possibility.
No skin off my back.
There's a possibility of an appeal to the commissioner, but the commissioner is John, and he never reduces that.
That's right.
Things, so it's probably going
to
be a lifetime
stick
ban.
To the initial ruling.
Yep. Would you consider yourself a crow commissioner?
Crow puns.
You are pushing your luck, buddy.
The crows.
I do have another get off my lawn. You guys ready for this one?
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Here we go. What animal species are we going to piss off now?
The New York Islanders. So as I was watching this game, it's completely unacceptable. I think I've mentioned this before, but it is completely unacceptable that they have players named Ryan Pulock and Adam Pellick. And it's also completely unacceptable that the goalie for the New York Islanders is Ilya Sorokin, and the goalie for the New York Rangers is Igor
Shesterkin.
I can't even keep it straight. And these are good goalies, right?
Yes.
But their names are too similar. Somebody has to make changes here. Either they have to move to farther teams from each other. They can't play right across the river. That's ridiculous. Pulock and Pellick, how do you even have that happen?
I guess that's why Nicholas Backstrom's never played kind of close to each other. Is that
that's
right?
That's true. The goalie and the forward. I met Nicholas Backstrom, the goalie, not that long ago. He's one of the coaches for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
So, the Sebastian Aho thing is, I think that's a good example, right? They don't play close to each other. So at least you can say like, well, not that Sebastian Aho, but the other one.
Well, except they play against each other sometimes. So that's a little bit of a challenge.
Isn't the bad Sebastian Aho, is he still on the Islanders too? Was he playing there?
I don't think he was playing.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
The bad one.
Vancouver's
now, there's a good designator, right?
Yeah.
The problem is all these guys that we're talking about are good. So you can't say like, oh, the bad Russian goalie with the four letter I first name and the 7 to 8 letter last name that starts with an S and has the same number of syllables. That's tough. I have a hard time with that.
I feel you on the Pellick versus Pulock, but not the Shesterkin Sorokin.
Oh, you had a hard time there remembering the two names.
I don't know, man.
The reason I'm so frustrated with it is because when you're trying to live tweet and do things fast, not that it's me, of course, as the Twitter intern, it can be anybody. It could be anybody in the world that's running that Twitter account at @sound_hockey. But it's really hard to remember in the moment, am I writing about Sorokin or Shesterkin, Pulock, Pellick? It's too much. I can't accept it.
They play on different teams. Unless you're tweeting about the Islanders playing the Rangers, I think.
So, yeah, everyone on the Islanders is signed for like 8 years. So
that's
this isn't going to change. So I think you're just going to need to get used to it for one game a year or so.
Right.
But Vancouver could have two Elias Petterssons.
That's true.
Oh,
So that would be fun.
Maybe.
It might happen.
Maybe the good Elias won't be there when the bad Elias
we can only
comes
hope.
In.
We can
Well, they can't allow that to happen.
Right. So that's
the
why.
The Canucks cannot allow
that's
that.
That's why the good one won't sign and re-sign. So.
I like that.
There have been three games since our last recording, and you know, I came into these games slash out of the All-Star break bye week feeling more optimistic than I should have. I went on to that What's Crackin' show and said, here's why I think the team is going to make the playoffs. They came out of the break and looked horrible. Now, I think that there's some leeway that could theoretically be given to the Kraken because when they played the Flyers, for example, they were playing a team that had already played twice and won both of those games against good teams, right? So that team had already found its legs. Kraken came out looking really well. I thought they looked okay at the beginning, and then as the game went on, it got like worse and worse to the third period when they had two total shots and both of them were from Jared McCann, one 30 seconds into the period and one with 30 seconds left. That's not great, right? That's a pretty objectively very bad period, and yet they did score a goal in that period. But and then next game against New Jersey, I thought was arguably, I don't want to say it was the worst that they've played all season, but it was top five, bottom five worst.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to give the caveat that they were coming off a long layoff in Philadelphia, but by shot quality share, it's their worst. That was their worst game of the season, and New Jersey was on track to be that. It looked like that through 30 minutes until it seemed like New Jersey just really took their foot off the gas pedal there. And the Kraken maybe found their game in the second half of the game as well. But still, New Jersey's one of the worst shot quality shares of the entire season. So two of the very worst games of the entire season is a hard way to come out of your break.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I was ready to throw in the towel after that New Jersey game. I even wrote it in three takeaways. I said, they're looking like sellers. I think it's time for them to start pulling the trigger on these things. And then they come out against the New York Islanders and look totally different. Now, oops, I dropped my phone. That's what that sound was, in case you heard that. But yeah, they came out against the Islanders and just looked a lot better. Still, they only score one goal. But I don't know. It's funny how much that pendulum swung in my head from, and they only won in a shootout, right? Which could go either way. And yet that win just felt so much to me like, all right, they're back on track. They won this game in a shootout. It's going to give them some confidence. They're only 4 points out of a playoff spot because everybody lost. I'm not ready to sell yet. So it was just interesting how much that swung. And maybe I'm just overreacting very much, but it's been a weird, little bit of a weird week here.
I think, you know, it's funny, the three games kind of in a way are kind of a microcosm of the season in the sense that, you know, the first game was terrible. The New Jersey game, the first half of that was terrible. The first, you know, if we're looking at it in total across these three games, you know, about half the gameplay they played terribly, and then they turned it around second half of the New Jersey game, and then against the Islanders, they played pretty well. That's kind of what this team has been. They're just oscillating back and forth between good and bad play. And I think at this point, I've just kind of come to the truth of it, that they're just, that's what an average team does.
Yeah.
And they're just pretty average.
Well, and I think like they have to be at their very best to be a good team. And really good teams, when they're not at their very best, they still find ways to win. And so I just don't think that they're at that spot. Like they have to all bring it. They have to all be pulling in the same direction. They have to execute. They have to have the effort. And that doesn't happen every single night during the course of an 82-game season. It should happen, I think, more frequently than it has for this team, honestly. But yeah, I don't know. I'm like, maybe now they put another run together and then they get themselves back into the playoff picture. And that would be super fun, way more fun than the alternative. But yeah.
They can't score right now.
I know.
Right? They've got 4 goals in those 3 games.
Mm-hmm.
That stinks. Haven't had a power play goal in the last 4 games.
Your voice just did an Alicia Keys there.
Sorry about that.
That's all
Hopefully
right.
you can dub Ooh, that over.
Let's see what we can do.
Or the internet does
Clean
it for
that
me.
Up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Haven't scored a power play goal in 4 games, which is the longest drought they've had all season. But that's been kind of the name of the season, right? Is they can't really score. And I don't know what it is, because I looked at some high danger opportunities and they're pretty close to what they did last season. It's just the shooting percentage. So I will highlight, I thought Burakovsky's best game was the Islanders.
100%.
I think he's actually coming out of the break looking pretty good.
Yeah, so...
Which is ironic, because that's when he got hurt last year.
He broke something last year.
His groin.
I don't know if you didn't break your groin, but
yeah.
Anyway, that still long odds to make it. I kind of thought that they needed of these three games. So that's New Jersey Islanders and upcoming Boston. They needed 3 points to just even remotely still have a chance. And I thought the New Jersey was the easiest of the three.
Yeah.
And they lost that one. So they need 1 point. I think they need 1 point in Boston to really kind of keep hope alive, because it's getting, I mean, I think their odds are most projections are around, they got 10% odds to make it a playoffs. Mm-hmm. So
is that what they're at now? 10% even after that win?
Yeah.
They were, but I saw they were at like 20 after
that was
this.
Before New Jersey, I think.
Was it? And then they took a big dive after.
Yeah.
Man, but I thought that they would have gotten themselves, I haven't looked at it.
Depends,
so.
It depends where you look.
Yeah.
You know, some of these model out every game and then go like, okay, well, these are the odds. Sure. Or they just say like they're on a projected or the spectrum of points that they could get. You know, they kind of assume they're going to continue on the current path. And anyway.
It's so, like they're playing Boston tomorrow, so they won't get any points is what a model might assume.
Or they'll say they're going to get 0.2 points, mm-hmm. right? Because they have a 1 in 5 chance of winning or getting a point or something.
Maybe that should be our periodic parlay is over under 0.5 points tomorrow. Okay, we won't do that. All right. So, yeah, so that was that. Matty Beniers had a starring role on the goal against by Jack Hughes, which ended up being a really pretty goal. But he just made kind of a lackadaisical play. He was just kind of standing still with the puck in his own zone. Didn't see Erik Haula sneaking up behind him. Haula picked his pocket, found Jack Hughes. Jack Hughes banked it in off of Joey Decord's mask from the corner. So that was not a great play, and that was the kind of play that we saw from the Kraken. I thought that night that one was probably the most egregious screw-up, and it really cost them the most. And then he bounced back the following night to his credit, and he scored the only regulation goal. And it came in an interesting fashion because Ryan Pulak threw him awkwardly into the boards. It looked like he was going to be down and out and hurt and who knows what was going to happen. Started going to the bench, saw an opportunity and said, you know what? I'm going to take this pass from Jared McCann and come in and score. So that was pretty great. And his post-game presser was funny too, because he said something like, well, it hurt a lot, but then I saw the opportunity and I was like, oh, I'm not that hurt. Yeah, maybe I can go play. So... yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yep. Those plays are kind of an interesting encapsulation of Beniers' season, though, because we were talking last time, he's kind of gotten into this rut of overpossessing the puck, like on that play where he was stripped for the goal in the New Jersey game. You know, he's just a little slow on the play looking for possession rather than moving the puck up the ice. And he didn't see Hughes coming behind him. And then
that was Haula. That's all right.
Oh, Haula.
That's all right.
And then Hughes scored.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You're right. Haula was a pain in the butt that game, mm-hmm. particularly for Joey Decord. Mm-hmm. Then the play with Pulak, you know, the lack of physicality shows up there. He's not going to win, you know, a contested play into the corner. Good on him to bounce back, though.
Yeah. That play reminded me a lot of when the Wisconsin Badgers won the national title. Robbie Earle seemed like he was hurt, but then he just wasn't anymore, and he went and scored a goal. So very similar. You guys remember that, right?
No.
It was like 2006, I think.
Doesn't help me.
You don't remember that?
Nope. No. We'll have to put a pin in that.
Is that all we wanted? Well, I guess Brian Dumoulin got hurt in the Devils game. Ty Cartier got scratched for a couple of games in favor of Kyle Yamamoto, but then Yamamoto got scratched against the Islanders. Pierre-Edouard Belmar is officially off injured reserve, but he hasn't played yet. So
I don't know how he gets in.
Yeah. It is a deep-ish roster right now.
Yeah, the team was almost fully healthy there for a moment, and then Brian Dumoulin got injured. But so we'll see what goes with that. He's not on IR. Like, but
actually, we should kind of park some time for Dumoulin. I think he's played relatively well since like the first 5 weeks of the season.
I agree. He's been very serviceable, right? Like exactly what you would have wanted him to
steady
be.
Eddie. I agree.
Steady. Yeah. That's perfect. Perfect way to describe it. Yep. I do have a hypothetical for you guys. Knowing what you know, what has to happen? Well, I'll just ask the question first, and then I'll let you guys give your 2 cents. What has to happen for the Kraken to pull the trigger and start moving their expiring contracts?
So, okay, I'll start. We talked about this a little bit in a roundtable on soundofhockey.com a few weeks ago, and I circled the Canucks game, which is Thursday, February 22nd. So that's three games from now, as like kind of a couple weeks before the trade deadline, as a date where, you know, maybe if their odds are really down by that point, you know, maybe management should be looking at making moves. So I think, you know, these next three games, if they only get 2 points in that stretch, I think by that point you're looking at.
I think that's exactly what I was thinking before you even mentioned. Oh. I said in the next three games they need at least 3 points, and I think that's going to continue to be a moving target. If they can get four, right? Their odds are really long right now. And part of me is like, well, you should just be listening at all times.
Yeah.
Again, I think as much as I love Wenberg, I'm probably the biggest Wenberg fan in Seattle, but. If he's not coming back, he's not coming back. And if you can get what I think is at least a second round draft pick based on the trades to date, the big trades to date in the last 4 weeks, I think you got to consider that now, even if somehow they win the next three games. I don't know.
Yeah. And that kind of syncs up with, I don't know how much substance there is to the report that Elliot Friedman had about, you know, the Kraken looking to maybe try and re-sign Everly.
I think we've known that for a while, actually.
No, for sure. But
we've talked about it. So I always hate when people are like, oh, this is news, right? No. I swear we've talked about this.
For sure. But the timeline would match up, right? I mean, they come back home, they'll have, you know, a week or so. Those conversations can happen. Like, is a deal going to come together or not? They'll probably know that with Everly before, you know, at least a week or two in advance of the trade deadline. So yeah, I think, you know, three or four games from now, I think we'll know which direction this is going.
Here's a little spin. Well, do you want to kind of give your two cents?
Sure. My two cents are that I think you guys are exactly right. But I was like ready to say sell after the two losses. I just thought, but then they win the next one. And I'm like, no, hold. Don't do it just yet. Like, wait until, like, I want them to be...
Well,
I think they err, just thinking about what they actually do, I think they err on the side of holding until they can't anymore. Because if they can make the playoffs, they want to do that, I think.
And you kind of need these guys to be in the playoffs too.
Yes,
right?
But it's like, it's too important to the franchise at this time when they're trying to re-up their season ticket holders, and they're trying, you know, like, if they have the chance to make the playoffs, because it was such a big thing last year, right? It really was. It brought true attention to the team. I think the city kind of rallied around them a little bit. It was just a fun thing for everybody involved.
Yeah.
I think if they have that opportunity, they need to hold on until the deadline before they make these moves. But now if they go and lose the next two, three, four in a row, that's it. I think they're just too far out of it at that point. You might as well pull the trigger.
Spinning the hypothetical a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Kraken win the next two games.
Next how many?
Two.
Two. Okay.
Somebody offers a first for Wenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider it?
I certainly consider it.
100% yes.
I don't know if I immediately say yes to it. I might say give me a couple more games to see how they're doing.
Well, conversely, they lose the next two games. And somebody offers you a fourth for Wenberg.
A fourth
or a third for Wenberg.
No.
I'm just saying there's like two parts of this equation here.
If they lose the next two and I get offered a first, I'd probably take it.
Yeah, for sure. But if they lose the next two and you only get offered
a fourth rounder?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. First of all, I think he's worth more than that.
Well, I know that, but my point is, you should always be listening, and those variables are kind of always in play. I don't know what the market is for Wenberg, right? And I don't even know does he have a 10 team no trade or something like that?
I think he does.
So there's a couple variables that we need to consider. But even at the trade deadline, they're out of it and somebody offers you a fourth. Wouldn't you just ride it out with Wenberg to kind of like I'm not going to devalue kind of his worth here. So
I think
and it's good for
I
the
think that's
remaining
a bad
games.
That's a bad trade.
Yeah.
I don't know. They also, at that point, you almost want to lose as much as possible to get the best draft pick available.
Theoretically, yes.
Yeah.
But
so do you just trade him for whatever you can get? Maybe. I just don't see that happening, though. I think they're going to get offered better than a fourth rounder for him.
What about a third? I mean, you know where I'm going here. Like, eventually, I think a second is probably the most likely scenario. That's kind of what I hopefully more. But I think if you get a second, that's probably what the most likely scenario. But if you only get offered a third, I don't know. Maybe you hold on to them.
Hmm. Yeah. And now it's for making moves now. I said 100% yes to your first round mm-hmm. draft pick hypothetical just because it's such a great return. I feel like I couldn't turn it down. But I mean, the players talked about they had a meeting in between the New Jersey game and the Islanders game. The Islanders game obviously went well. In the hypothetical where they win the next two, it's kind of like, how do you take the wind out of their sails at that point? It's like, okay, they might be onto something here. I mean, if you're beating the Bruins,
you kind of owe it to the team.
Owe it to the team to stick with, to hold for longer, to Darren's point. But still, I mean, if a first round pick comes along for Eberle or Wennberg, it's going to be really hard for me, you know, armchair quarterbacking
where we're at. Because it's like, even if this team makes it,
right,
what do we expect? They need to show, go on a serious run and like feel like, okay, they've really turned the corner officially before I'll like think they've got much of a prayer even in the playoffs. So right.
One thing we didn't talk about yet, a big variable in the Islanders game, Philip Grubauer played really well.
Not the biggest goalie, but big in that game.
Okay. It's a one game sample size.
The one thing is I will remind, he was playing pretty well before he got hurt.
Yeah.
Relatively well. It was in the Tampa game that he got hurt.
He showed mostly pretty well this season, but he had some stinkers too.
No, he did. He did. But the two or three games prior, I thought he was playing pretty well.
Yeah.
I thought the team played pretty well defensively. The Islanders looked a little flat to me, but Grubauer was really good. I mean, it reminded me a little bit, not quite to this extent, but of Driedger's first game back. Mm. I mean, Driedger's first game back was better. But it was great to see him out there and perform well because I mean, we've been talking about it. I mean, Joey's going to wear down.
Yes.
So that's the thing, though,
right? But think about when this team has gone on runs, and maybe this is an overly optimistic take, but when this team has gone on runs, they get a game or two where the goalie comes out and looks really good, and then all of a sudden they start playing with a ton of confidence, right? And the goalie gets on a little bit of a run. This is how the Kraken had their 9-game win streak this year. It's exactly how they had their 8-game win streak last year with Martin Jones, again, when Grubauer was hurt. And so it just makes you think like, well, if they can rely on Grubauer a little bit here and he gets hot and he takes them on a run, then great. And if not, and he can kind of sub in every now and then and at least spell Joey DeCord and let him get hot again, there could be something there, right? They have two, if both of them are going, they have two legitimate goalies. It's
incredible. What if you were to put these goalies with last year's team?
Yeah.
I know. Then you'd be onto something. A team that could score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And defend.
Yeah. It's like my golf game. There's like, I'm one day I'll be great with my irons, but can't hit a drive into the fairway, right? And then I can't putt. And one day I can do two of the three. I can never piece it all together. One piece has to not be working. So anyway, I wrote in three takeaways. I'm going to go ahead and, which by the way is 26 of 27 shots, .963 save percentage, which was his highest of the season.
Nice.
.963. Nice. But I wrote in here, one thing that has plagued Grubauer through his tenure with the Kraken has been when games start with few or no shots on goal. When a shot finally comes, it tends to be off a doozy of a rush or takes a weird deflection and suddenly he's off on the wrong foot. Grubauer seems to like getting into a rhythm with a few early shots to let him feel the puck, which I can tell you as a goalie is a thing that happens. If you can get a couple shots early in the game, that's really helpful. And he really didn't get much work at the beginning of this game Tuesday. But when he did and things picked up toward the end of the opening frame, when Andrei Burakovsky took a bad luck 4-minute penalty, you could tell he was tracking the puck well, despite facing only a couple offerings in the first half of the opening period. Okay, so that's what I wrote about Grubauer. My comment that I received was a quote of that, of the when a shot finally comes, it tends to be a doozy. And then I got, it sounds like you're making excuses for him. I can't win when I write about Grubauer.
Nope.
I cannot win. And it's a great example of like how polarizing he is amongst the fan base. I think somebody asked us last week in the mailbag, right? Like, why do fans love Grubauer so much? And then there's another one that's like, oh, great. Here come the Grubauer people to... I'm just like, I'm just saying it like it is, right? There's some games where he doesn't get a lot of shots and he lets one in. Sometimes I didn't feel like I was making an excuse.
We're going to explore this together.
All right.
Because I have the data on it.
Okay.
And we'll kind of come with some parameters and we'll build it into the Monday musings.
Okay.
How about
Are you
that?
Ready for data therapy?
Usually that doesn't do much for me, but... No, my point in reading all that, though, I just think it's really interesting how there's some people that just, no matter what Grubauer does, right? And this is the best he's played all season, theoretically, right? Based on the stats of the game. Well, he maybe had a couple games that were better than this earlier in the year, but he played really well. Objectively, he played really well. I just wrote that he played really well in this game, and then, you know.
But, I think Grubauer is one of the more polarizing players, but we've saw it plenty with Wennberg, right? Where people not kind of standing up and fighting, getting pushed around. We need literally people continue to say they need enforcers on this team, as if enforcers is a role anymore.
We had Jeremy Lauz on.
Yeah. End of an era when we lost him.
He's not
who's our guy? Who did we get for him? We got somebody really.
Second rounder.
Was it Yanni Newman?
Yanni Newman, I think. Yeah. He's doing pretty well.
Love that.
Anyway, thought that was interesting. Philip Grubauer's back. He played really well in this game.
Oh, here we go again. Yeah.
It also is kind of crazy that this is the first time he played, right?
Right. Yeah.
Hextall kept going back to Decord, even when it looked like, all right, Joey looks tired. He needs a break. He didn't play bad, but he didn't play outstanding either. Let's give him a break tonight. No, right back to Decord.
You know what that tells me is that, Hextall has a very level demeanor with the media, but I think he on the inside, he knows every 2 points is incredibly important at this point. Yeah. And I feel like his thought process must have been, first game back could be a struggle, and I can't afford to risk that. We need every point we can get.
I don't know if you guys caught Grubauer's post-game interview, his scrum. It was really, really good because he talked about, people asked him, and I apologize for not remembering who asked the question about him sitting on the bench for a couple games, is that, advantageous? It was actually a non-Seattle writer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, I definitely think it is. And it's like hard. You have different perspective. When you're down low, you're in the room, you kind of get that routine back instead of just being,
right,
he called
in.
It upstairs and then just right in the net.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you don't see things as well as the same. And then someone's like, oh, would you recommend that? And he's like, well, I can't, recommend for other people, but it worked for me. Thought that was really interesting. And he also kind of talked about the shootouts, not exactly ideal for a first start because it's just everything's a little bit, he's not in the flow quite like if he was playing regularly. So it was a really interesting interview. I don't know what they put on YouTube, but it was pretty cool.
Let's move on to our segments. And our first segment is John's favorite segment, Bad Boys.
Hell yeah.
This is a fun one. This is a very fun one.
Oh, yeah. We're going to spend some time on this bad boy.
The Ottawa Senators. Ottawa Senators and the Toronto Maple Leafs were coming down to the wire. The Maple Leafs had an empty net. The Ottawa Senators had a chance to score. Senators had a chance to score in the open net. Ridley Gregg skated it all the way down to the top of the crease, wound up and took a slap shot. And Morgan Rielly didn't like it, so he responded by cross-checking him in the face, injuring him. There was a huge brouhaha, and then Rielly got a 5-game suspension for this. Any thoughts, gentlemen?
I don't know. Are people discussing this?
No. I've had a discussion about it. 5 games is a big one. I think we've seen guys get cross-checked in the face
Perron earlier this season, he got 6.
Yeah, okay. Right? All right, so that's kind of aligns with that then.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's break this down. This is how I want to – I've got lots of thoughts on this. But for one, Ridley Gregg, I guess showed up the Toronto Maple Leafs by ripping a slap shot into an empty net.
Yep.
That seems to be a response would appear expected. That's what a lot of the old school hockey fans tend to think.
Okay, so
that was disrespectful. So first question is, do you think that was disrespectful?
Yes.
No.
See, I'm with Curtis here, although I think most people are with Darren.
I think most people are with
And that. Ironically, nobody feels the same way as me about crows.
That's
what the hell, yeah. Right?
But yeah. I really, it's so stupid to me. You scored a goal. He was excited or wanted to kind of put the last nail in the coffin by slapping. If in the NBA, a team's up by 8 and they break the press with 5 seconds left and somebody slam dunks the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fine.
You sounded like you really knew what you were talking about there.
You know what I'm saying.
Like, you know, the game with the hoops.
Yeah. You lost me at breaks the press. I actually don't know what that means, if I'm being honest.
They're pressuring the opponent.
Okay.
And the offense kind of breaks the press and gets kind of behind the guys. And all of a sudden, he's got an open net.
Slam dunks
the basketball.
Yeah. I think that's how they say it.
I played NBA Jam. I know about this.
So, but like, they slam dunk the ball, even if they're up by 10 or up by 20.
Yeah.
Why does NHL, there's this code. The good old boys have to respect the game.
So I think I agree with you. The NBA is maybe a little different, but baseball, at least until recently, is maybe a little bit more similar in that, you know, if someone like did a bat flip, you know, after hitting a home run, they get a ball thrown at their rear end the next time they're up. And
can't show up the pitcher.
But I think that culture has changed a bit. Like the rules got more strict about throwing at people.
Or a touchdown dance after, you know, scoring a touchdown and you do some kind of celebration.
Sure.
It's disrespectful.
So I think in baseball, if you would have talked about this 20 years ago, people would have been like, yeah, you never flip your bat. Like, yeah, you're going to get hit next time you're up. Yeah, you're going to get in the air. And the culture has just shifted. You know, it's not totally there, but the culture has shifted. And I, you know, just personally, I think that hockey should be on that same road. And anyone that says, I'll let you finish. But I think the game's emotional. A slap shot into an empty net is like kind of funny. It's kind of, it's caught up in the emotions. And should Toronto be not happy about it? Sure. Yes, they should not be happy about it. Anyway, but that's only half the story.
Right. So I do want to kind of park that.
Yep.
Put a pen in it.
I'm okay with being in the minority there. Yeah, right. Fine. Too. Like, if that's how we still want to kind of respect the game.
Darren's in the majority. Darren wins.
Yeah. Darren wins this one. Okay. Totally fine. But by no means is a appropriate response to anything that happens on the ice to put a stick in the side of somebody's head. Right. Bottom line.
You've said that before, and I agree with you. I think it was right for him to respond. I don't think it was right for him to cross-check them in the face.
And
those are two totally separate things.
I'm relatively okay with that, right? Yeah. I think it's a little stupid that there has to be a response.
I'm okay with him responding.
But I get it. Like, that's going to take some time to change.
Smile and sucker punch.
There's also a big difference between hockey and all the other sports you guys were talking about, because players are still literally allowed to fight. Right? Like, you're not allowed to do that in any of the other games. And if you do, you get kicked out for a while.
It's fair.
But isn't that supposed to be the built-in mechanism for all of this? A squared up fight?
Yes. And it wasn't a squared up fight because he cross-checked him in the face. No, so that's where he went wrong.
No, that's precisely what I'm saying. It's kind of like, I feel like any defense of this, it's like the response was right, but what he did was wrong. It's like, no, the only response he did was something that was wrong. You don't cross-check someone in the face. So I understand he was emotional too. I think it's, you know, great that they were both teams were so invested in this game that it elicited that kind of response. That's kind of great for hockey, but it's terrible to cross-check someone in the face.
I do not understand how somebody can legitimately intentionally cross somebody in the face.
Well,
it just seems insane.
There's that part for me. But then for me, I also think of like the after the playness of it. And I just think back to Jared McCann last year. It's like you're not prepping to defend yourself in that. Not that you can ever defend yourself from a sucker cross check to the face. But if it's in the flow of the play, you know, you might be guarding yourself against getting hit. He was just coming off a goal. He didn't expect someone to come over and start that. I mean, if they dropped their gloves and fought, like, I'm not into that either, but at least that is more on the correct side of the line.
I mean, I've also seen plenty of, even the Toronto coach kind of implied like, the Leafs get more scrutiny and therefore like they get penalized or get more. And apparently they do I've been told they have more suspensions in the George Parros era than any other team.
I saw some data to that effect. I can't say that I verified it.
I'd like to drill into that a little bit. And that's fine because some team needs to be.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know how you measure it as far as like what's legitimate and what's not. And it's relatively uncommon. Yeah. So it's not like there's a lot of data in general around suspensions. So
I don't know. If there was any team that was probably gonna get the most suspensions, it's maybe the team that's under so much pressure that they are probably bound to snap every now and then.
and Ryan Reeves with some great effing quotes. My God.
Linus Allmark was also fined $5,000 for high-sticking Michael Isomont. What do you have to say for yourself, Curtis?
Soft penalty. Soft fine there. Come on.
I thought it was too, although he did swing his stick at a player's head. He hit him in the helmet, so there's no damage done. But
He did kind of get run too, right?
Yeah, he got nailed. Yeah.
Doesn't justify hitting somebody in the head.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. He grazed him, and
My response was mostly a joke. I mean, it's fine.
Not a lot of goalies getting fined for stuff like this, though. No. So that was interesting. Those are our bad boys. We now move on to our weekly one-timers. Whoopsh. Our first weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. Russia and Belarus will not be reincorporated into the 24-25 IAHF championship season.
Why? What's going on?
I don't know. But one thing that I saw pointed out here is that this is 24-25. Olympics are in 26. So they haven't been ruled out of the Olympics, which is... interesting.
Yeah. Maybe the athletes of Russia or whatever.
When was the last time that they were allowed to actually compete? Right? Like, it's kind of wild.
Yeah. But it does, I don't know that Belarus was a strong contender to be there anyway. Maybe they were, but they're effectively out because they can't play the qualifier tournament that they need to be in the Olympics. Mm. So Belarus won't be there at the Olympics.
Okay.
It's interesting that, it might open a spot for Denmark.
Oh, Ollivander Bjorkstrander. Hello. Our next weekly one-timer. The Bean Pot is done. Northeastern wins for, was it the fifth time in 6 years?
Yeah, it's either 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6.
Yeah.
You wouldn't really expect it. They were kind of the little brother of that tournament for a long time. Northeastern and Harvard. Mm-hmm. But they've been on a good little run. And game-winning goal was by a player with a pretty special name.
Well, I was about to say, the game-winning goal came in overtime, and who scored it, Curtis?
It's Gunnar Wolf Fontaine.
Yeah.
That's
famed Gunnar Wolf Fontaine. Yeah. This was during the, if you folks have been listening for a long time, in the throes of the pandemic, we had Chris Peters on, and we said, hey, are there any guys in the draft with exciting names? And Gunnar Wolf Fontaine came right out of his mouth, so... We've been tracking Gunnar Wolf, baby. So
I mean, and he ended up being a seventh round draft pick, and he only has 7 goals for Northeastern this season, but has goals in both the Beanpot games. So Sound of Hockey is probably the foremost Gunnar Wolf Fontaine podcast, I would think.
I think he's been talked about more on this podcast than any other, that's for sure. Probably
true. Do you know Northeastern had only 13 shots on net in that Beanpot for the championship?
Did not know that.
And 4 goals?
It's what I love about hockey. I just love that you can get any one game. That's why the Olympics are so great. You can just get goalied and then you're done. I don't know. I love it.
A reverse goalied, I guess. Yeah.
Our next weekly one-timer. John Butchergrass reports that the next outdoor... Well, first off, the Winter Classic. I don't think we talked about that, did we? That it's going back to Chicago for Wrigley Field. Fine. Chicago Blackhawks against the St. Louis Blues. And then Butchergrass reported that Columbus is getting also an outdoor game at the Horseshoe at the Ohio State University next season. So against Detroit. So I like that. I like Columbus against Detroit. That's a little different.
Yeah, that should be pretty fun. I mean, hopefully they're competitive. I mean, I don't know. Blackhawks and Blues doesn't really get me too excited.
No.
But if Blue Jackets are competitive... Red Wings are on the way up. Could be a good game.
Our next weekly one-timer, Sean Couturier has been named the 20th captain in the history of the Flyers. Did he score against the Kraken? I think he did, right? And then I think, was that the night that Torts did the middle finger, saying that was a middle finger to me?
Oh,
I think he was talking about Couturier. Yeah. So maybe not. No, he was talking about Konechny, I think. Whatever.
Are those names too similar?
Do we think about this? Anything? Do we think...
Yeah. Not much.
I don't know why this even made it onto the show notes. All right, let's close the show with our tweets of the week. John, your tweet of the week.
My tweet of the week comes from Caps Boy Bebop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's the shot of Ryan Reeves getting nailed by Nathan Walker shortly after the suspension of Riley and after Reeves had those quotes. He said, "I'm sorry. But if you say make hockey violent again and then get bodied by a little Australian boy a day later, you got to retire." Of course, Nathan Walker being from Australia.
Yeah, I liked that. My tweet of the week came from Kendall Appel, maybe Appel. responding to last week's tweet about our mailbag episode, in which we were asked what would we name our pet if we had to name it after a Kraken player. And so Kendall just wrote back regarding dog names, meet Olive Barkstrand, and this is an incredibly cute pup.
Yes.
So we got a picture. It's a really cute pup. Super cute. Thank you for sharing that, Kendall. Really appreciate it. Curtis, do you have a tweet of the week?
Sure, I can call out one or two here. I think the best.
I don't like how that sounds.
Well, the best tweet I saw was
my expectations are low.
They should be lower.
Okay.
From How To Hockey, it was the tweet that was a few ideas for Ridley Gregg's next empty net goal celebration tweet. That's really a video tweet. I just recommend people find it. It's quite funny.
I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because remember the Kraken at one of their games, they had some like hockey influencer doing tricks.
Yeah, he was at the Winter Classic as well.
Okay,
yeah.
So another one of those guys, Pavel Barber, who I see everywhere, he did one of those demonstrations at the Senators game. And he showed how to score in an empty net, and he skated all the way in and took a slap shot, and all the fans gave him a standing ovation.
This was like yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
In the next game after.
I love that.
Yeah, so that's pretty funny.
That is awesome. And then I guess I'll just do this one too. This is a tweet from Marina Mayer. It's about Brad Marchand, had 1,000 games
never
in
heard
the
of
NHL.
This guy.
Never heard of this guy. Well,
big
anyway.
Face licker.
He's been known. And it's just a clip of him back when Claude Julien was the coach of the Bruins. Mm-hmm. And Marchand's yelling. He's on the bench. He's yelling at someone on the ice that says, "Relax, you're awful. You're embarrassing." And Claude Julien comes over and says, "Are you talking to the ref? Hey, are you talking to the ref?" And he's like, "No, I'm talking to whoever." And Claude's like, "Okay, keep going. It's pretty good. Got to keep up the relationship with the ref. Yeah, otherwise, Marchand, you do your thing.
Yeah, I like that. All right, so those are our tweets of the week.
And that wraps up episode 274 of the Sound of Hockey podcast. We thank you all for listening. No reviews. What's up with that? Mm. Hey, submit your...
Hey.
Come on, guys.
Hey,
forget about it.
Get a review in there. Why don't you... We broke them. John's broken.
So you can submit your review on Apple Podcasts, and we will read it on the next show. Thanks to all our Patreon supporters. And look for a new mailbag episode in your Patreon feed that should be coming up shortly. I think that's it.
We were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird is like a crow.
Okay.
Close enough.
I didn't know what that is.
You don't know that song?
I don't think so.
What? See you guys next week.